Hello, everyone. Melinda Zarate with Emboldened Heart here. I was really kind of, I guess, guided is too light of a word, more like compelled to just make this recording and just share some thoughts and ideas with all of you. I have been really, as many of you who've listened to me lately know, for the last couple of months, I've been in what I kind of almost have felt like has been an incubation period, where I've been doing a lot of reading and studying and inner work, and just things are really starting to kind of percolate in new directions in my thinking and in the way that I am interacting with others and in what I want for myself and those that I love and for our beautiful Emboldened Heart community and the human race and the planet at large. So what really kind of spurred me to use this topic, the energy of calls that I like to do. This one, I was inspired by a movie that I just saw this week called Arrival. And many of you have probably seen it. It's a really beautifully done and very thoughtful story of another species that comes to planet Earth and how we try to interact. And it's absolutely brilliant the way that it is presented, because it's all about communication, connection, perception, and interpretation, and all of those things are what lead to understanding. And it's really almost a metaphor for what we are looking at right now, certainly in ourselves, with those around us that we interact with. Certainly with our communities, and definitely with our country. And it's amazing the way things are unfolding. I know those of you who have listened to me have heard me say this, but it's so true. Since the U.S. election, I really have kind of felt like a Picasso painting. I have gone through so many emotions and so many thoughts and so many levels of feelings, and I'm still in it. I am. And I heard some things today. I attend a non-denominational church, and we have speakers from many different faiths and no faith who come and bring us just remarkably interesting and thought-provoking messages. And today I had the pleasure of hearing a really powerful message from a Jewish rabbi. And he, too, was kind of bringing up for us to think about and look at our reactions and thoughts and feelings and our position, and where we have kind of arrived today with all of this after the election, the U.S. election. It was so interesting. And and the name of the sermon was wonderful. It was called "Can Peace Trump Fear?" I loved it. It was really, really good. So what I was kind of given to consider and contemplate, and some of what I want to share with all of you, is, okay, where are we? We have, quote, arrived at a place that maybe feels pretty uncomfortable to us, to many of us. According to the popular vote, the majority of us. But yet, we are, you know, we're not watching things unfold in a way that gives us any sense of peace or comfort or logic, even, if you will. You know, the tagline, "Make America Great." Well, that's happening. That's happening. It's happening inside me. It's happening around me. But the word "great" can be spelled differently. How about spelling it G-R-A-T-E, like great, as in grating on our nerves, grating on our thinking, great as in shred. And we certainly have sort of seen ourselves feel rather shredded. I know I've kind of walked around feeling pretty raw. I can't watch too much of the news. I get the New York Times headlines on the net, but I really cannot watch much news at all on television. And I can't really read much news. But I do subscribe to Time Magazine, and yesterday my Time Magazine arrived, and on the cover is President-elect Trump, and it says, "President of the Divided States of America." And that says it all, at least in the now, where we have, quote, arrived in the now. So what do we do? Where do we go? Where do we want to arrive? So some of the things that really kind of occurred to me, and I'm sure lots of you have seen this because it's shown up online a lot since the election, the U.S. election, is the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's 5 Stages of Grief. And I know I'm grieving right now. I'm grieving for what feels like the loss of integrity. I'm grieving for what looks like and sounds like the loss of respect for human rights and compassion for the planet Earth and for her inhabitants. I am feeling grief for what feels like the loss of innocence. The loss of a shared vision for our shared values. And so there's grief. I certainly have been in it, and it's interesting. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I think she developed this theory, I want to say, maybe even 35 or 40 years ago. I'm not sure about the exact date, but she wrote some just brilliant, brilliant books and did an enormous amount of very, very important and worthwhile research and study on the grief process. And we go through a grief process when we lose anything. Whether we lose a loved one to death or a pet to death, or whether we lose a relationship that it has great meaning to us, a job that is important to us, whether we lose or feel that we've lost ground, lost principles, lost our sense of direction, all of that activates the grief process. And according to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the five stages of grief are, and they, people kind of change them around as far as the order that you go through them. But the first one she listed is denial. So when a loss occurs, we go into denial. It's kind of an autopilot. And boy, did I. It was like, no, this can't be true. I don't believe this. This is not happening. How can this be? This is impossible. Those were all the thoughts that were kind of running through my head as I was watching things unfold on that Tuesday night of our U.S. election. I moved into really pretty strong denial that it was happening. And I stayed up late. I stayed up to watch them announce at Hillary Clinton's, at her headquarters with the glass ceiling. I stayed up until they announced that everyone was going to be directed to leave. And that was really difficult for me. Still was in denial. I still felt a lot of denial about it. It's like, no, when they count the votes, it'll be okay. So I went to bed. I certainly did not go to sleep. I wrestled and tossed and turned all night long, really kind of feeling besieged by demons. It just felt like a nightmare. It felt unreal, impossible, like a really, really bad dream that I wanted to wake up from. And that was my night. And then at about 5 in the morning, I picked up my phone and I had a text from my son saying, "I cannot believe Donald Trump is our president." And I knew it was true. So then I moved into stage 2 of the grief process, which is anger. I was livid. I couldn't believe it. I was just beside myself. I was just so upset and just still just stunned, but angry, really angry that it could have happened. How did it happen? You know, just in a real stew. So that's the second stage of grief. Then stage number 3 is bargaining. And bargaining is, wait a minute, if we can just do this, if we can just wait it out until they count all the votes and it'll be okay. We can make the Electoral College change their votes. We can do a recount. What if this? What if that? I mean, all of these bargaining thoughts were just running through my mind. And on Facebook and online, I mean, it was all over the place. People had moved into the bargaining thought process. And then stage 4 is depression. And that is where I really began to kind of feel, you know, like my ears were misshapen and one was 10 times bigger than the other one, and my eyeballs, you know, one of them was hanging out, and my body was, you know, completely out of balance, as was my thinking. Depression. And I think some of us have kind of been there in and out of depression since the election. So that's stage 4, depression. So we certainly don't want to stay there. Depression is not very useful. It doesn't accomplish much. It's a low movement, low energy. It's kind of, you know, you're sort of on the floor, kind of crawling around, not feeling too much like getting up and doing and acting and, you know, interacting. So depression if we stay in it, is very, very counterproductive, and in fact could be dangerous to us personally, individually, and certainly to our families, our communities, to our country, and to the planet at large. So the fifth stage of the grief process is acceptance. And I got to tell you, I am not there. I'm not there. I want to get to a point where I am accepting and I see, you know, see great, bright possibilities and all those things. I'm not there. I'm just being honest. I have my moments. I certainly do understand that Donald Trump is playing a role. I also certainly understand that we wanted change. We did. Wow. Did we get it? Oh, my goodness. So, you know, there are some areas that I'm kind of accepting. I accept that we want to change. I totally accept that. I accept that Donald Trump is playing a role. I accept that. That's about as far as I've been able to get at this point. Now, what I have been able to accept, though, is that we all individually and collectively have a great deal of power, and we will only be able to affect the kind of change that we hold out as being true in our emboldened hearts if we not only pay attention to our thoughts, our deeds, and our actions. And we're all going to be called on to take action. We are. We're going to be called on to get out of our comfortable, cozy little worlds and begin to take some action steps that maybe we have not been taking regularly or at all, or taking action steps that maybe we've never taken before. Because there is going to be an enormous opportunity for us to take action, to love ourselves first. We cannot help anybody else if we don't love ourselves and respect ourselves enough to step into it and take some action. So we are being called to love ourselves in perhaps the greatest way we ever have been. And I accept that. And I'm happy to accept that. I think it's high time. Because without self-love, we cannot be sovereign. We cannot be powerful, truly, authentically powerful. We have to love ourselves, each and every one of us. And in loving ourselves, and that includes compassion for ourselves, forgiveness for ourselves when we trip up, forgiveness for our past mistakes, forgiveness of those who were in our lives and perhaps were not at their best and did things that harmed us. We don't have to forget it, and we certainly don't have to pretend or deny it didn't happen. But we do have to forgive ourselves and step into our true power. And all of you know that I am just such a raving fan of the incredible work done by Dr. Hawking, David Hawking, Power versus Force. Absolutely, I mean, it's a book to live by. And what we're looking at right now in this political arena is exactly that. It is power versus force. And power, the way we have sort of been given the definition by much of the media and you know, maybe by parents or teachers or our education system, is not true power. Force never yields true power that lasts. So I would invite all of you to revisit Power versus Force. Pick it up, read it. There's lots of information online about it. There are YouTube videos. It's so important right now that we understand this, and the difference is very clear. And that we begin to really step into our own power, because there's a whole lot of forcing going on out there right now. And if we step into our own true power, we cannot be forced to do anything. So I'd like to charge all of you with revisiting this. And if you're not familiar with it, give yourself a great gift. Learn about this incredible work called Power versus Force. Again, was written by David Hawkins, a doctor, a psychologist, and a researcher. And I think it was written about 20, 25 years ago, but he was way ahead of his time. And he really, really did do some incredibly astute and brilliant and repeated work that essentially shows us that we as human beings have a moral compass. We just need to know where to find it, because we all have it. So really, really important for us to keep this all in mind. Other things that we might do, volunteer. Do some volunteer work. Help someone who's less fortunate than you. Take a stand for people who need it right now. This morning, one of the things that came out of the message that I heard from Rabbi Levy was that we now need to pray as if it is all up to God or spirit or source or higher power or whatever, but we need to act as if it is all up to me. And those two things combined are invincible. And I, again, would charge each and every one of you to embolden your hearts. Pray. Pray as if it's all up to Spirit or God, because you are God. You are an individualized expression of God or Spirit or Source. So pray. And then act as if it is all up to you. And those two things combined cannot do anything but connect you with your heart and connect your heart with your mind, so that we all are moving and acting and being more connected, more who we truly are. Because there's plenty of work to do now. It's just showing up all over the place. And, you know, all of us respond to work that has meaning, work that has true value. And, boy, we are being presented with it now. There are causes that have value and meaning that we can become involved with. And as much as we all kind of have a love-hate relationship with social media, I certainly do, social media has become an incredible force, and it's become a force for the negative, but it is, and for darkness, but it's also a force for good. Let's use it for good. There are a lot of really important petitions that are showing up online through social media and in your inbox. get involved, sign those petitions, show up for some of these marches and protests, because our very human rights are, they are on the fence right now. Women's rights, the rights of immigrants, the rights of the less fortunate, the rights of workers, certainly the rights of the indigenous peoples and their lands and the waters of the earth. All of those things are right now being presented for us. It's an enormous opportunity for each and every one of us to step up and take a stand. Standing Rock is not named that for no reason. It's time. Let's take a stand. We got a little complacent. We got a little too comfortable in our heated, air-conditioned homes with our cell phones and iPads and computers and, you know, over-connectedness. And now it's about life. It's about people. It's about the hearts and minds of the people of this planet. It's about the planet herself. And it's about the life on our planet, the plants, the animals, the water, the waters, the air. So, can you tell that I am fired up? I am. I absolutely am. And so there is plenty to do, plenty to do. And I have committed to myself, and I commit to each and every one of you, that I am going to be stepping up, taking even more action than before. This is not the time for, you know, flowers and feathers and fluffy platitudes. This is time for boots on the ground and prayers being sent to the heavens at the same time. And I would invite, encourage, and ask that each and every one of you look at this. Search in your own self for those places, those principles, those opportunities that really resonate for you, that have meaning for you, and step up, step out there, take a stand, get busy. Let's do this together. I would love to have all of you beautiful brothers and sisters as a part of this circle of change that we can initiate. So we have arrived. We have arrived, you beautiful souls. We have arrived at a place where we do not need to ask anymore, what is our purpose here? What is my mission? What can I do? Because there are plenty of things showing up. It's becoming clearer and clearer. Time to get cracking. Time to get our feet moving and our prayers moving. So I am so honored to be connected with all of you, and I am so honored to have each and every one of you as a part of this beautiful Emboldened Heart community. This is a global movement. This is a global online training academy and movement. This is activism. I'm calling it what it is. So let me again ask each and every one of you to embolden your heart and to step into action. Thank you for listening, and I wish each and every one of you great blessings. Namaste. Bye-bye for now.